LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everyone. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I'm your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina, and this week we welcome our special guest, Brother Christopher of RuneWorker.com, bringing a discussion on gay spirituality. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Brother Christopher. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now, let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone to the Monday night phenomenon that is Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. And if it's Monday and we're on the air, what does that mean? That means it is Magic Mondays on the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page. Take a few moments, jump on over to the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page, find the Magic Mondays post, comment, and get entered to win your chance at a free 15-minute reading that's a $60 value. With the Hoodoo Psychic of your choice, a lot of great readers out there on Hoodoo Psychics just ready and waiting to help you out. So Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychics on Facebook. All right. Hope everyone has been having a fantastic, fantastic Monday. You know, a lot of stuff been kind of going on behind the scenes with Folk Conjure and Folk Faith Ministries. Reverend James and I kind of putting in the work, getting things going as much as and fast as possible, burning the midnight oil, you know, candle at both ends, all that, all those wonderful little colloquialisms I will throw out there. But before we get too far into things, tossing it back over to you, Reverend James, how are things?
Well, like you said, Reverend Art, you know, we've been working on things for the websites and for the businesses. So those of you that have been keeping up with that, soon you will see Bath Crystals joining FolkConjure.com. You will soon see some herbal blends to use for dressing your candles and such on Folk Conjure. And on Folk Faith Ministries, you will soon see different puja services and Buddhist offerings, like butter lamp offerings, incense offerings. It's been quite a busy week in my Buddhist world. One of my main gurus, His Eminence Dasip Rinpoche, had his birthday this past week, and so did the Dalai Lama. Also have a few empowerments and initiations coming up. So for those that are interested in Tara, if you're interested in white Tara or green Tara, one is for long life and one is for generosity and compassion. If you're interested in that, I can pop some links into the chat. But those initiations and empowerments are going to be coming up this week. That's pretty much what I've been up to. How about yourself?
Well, as we both mentioned now, you know, definitely been working on a lot of different projects with herbs and actually some crystals and bath salts and just all kinds of things that we're just putting together. It's been fantastic getting back into the Conjure Kitchen more than we had been previously, and really starting to put together a lot of these products that you know, we do hand make everything that we possibly can. You know, we hand pour the candles that we offer. We lovingly pick the herbs and wildcraft as many as we possibly can. It's, you know, it's a labor of love. And Reverend James and I definitely love putting the time in, putting that work in, to be able to give y'all the absolute best that we possibly can. And, you know, Reverend James was mentioning about the upcoming different Buddhist empowerments, services and ceremonies and other interesting events that are coming up with his and my Buddhist practices. If you're interested, definitely check out Reverend James has started the Virtual Buddhist Study, VBS, Facebook group. There's a link in the chat. Go over there, you know, join the group, and he posts regularly the different events and how to sign up for them and, you know, different informational bits and pieces. You know, that group's been growing, and it's a lot of good info there. So especially if you have even a passing interest in learning, about Buddhism, go on and join in. We'd love to have you. And without further ado, we want to take a moment now and welcome back into the studio our good friend, Brother Christopher. How are things going on the West Coast?
It's hot. we're having our seasonal heat wave that is spreading across California and even up into the Pacific Northwest, with inland areas around where I live having 100 plus degree temperatures, and I happen to live near the coast, so it's milder, but it's also much more humid than it ordinarily is, so it's constantly sticky, sweaty, because we don't really get humidity here usually, so we're not really prepared for that. But otherwise, it's well. The world keeps on turning, and it doesn't seem to be as on fire as it can be. How are you guys?
You know, I've been noticing too on the Rune Worker website, you've been popping out there on Hoodoo Psychics quite a bit recently, out there offering your reading services to the masses. So definitely, folks, if you haven't had a chance, Brother Christopher did join us for Reading Palooza 3. Fantastic events. You know, we do those once a quarter. So stay tuned. Follow the Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places social medias and be ready for the next one. But, you know, he's a fantastic reader. And it's Magic Mondays. You could win a free reading with Brother Christopher. But things seem to be getting pretty busy for you in your neck of the woods. Different things going on. I read your blog. So I try to keep up to beat and up to pace with everything. Anything new coming up that we might be able to get a sneak peek on?
Not anything that I'm ready to talk about right now. Last week I was at a psychic fair, and that was interesting because I've previously done small fairs that were put on by small local groups that maybe only stage them like once a year or twice a year, and they're fun and they're interesting and I like them. This is my first, apparently there's like a psychic fair circuit that happens.
Oh yeah.
And it seems to have become very active post-2020 here in Southern California, to the point where it seems like there's a psychic fair happening somewhere in Southern California, which is everywhere from like Los Angeles, the greater Los Angeles area, all the way down to San Diego. And they always seem to happen at hotels, and they'll often easily have, I don't know, 50. I think I've even seen one that listed like 100 readers or 100 people present. Some people were readers. Others were vendors selling stuff. I don't know what they were selling. But the one I went to, there were people selling. One woman was selling mushrooms, which I was like, oh, well, welcome to California. Hey. Others were selling health food stuff, which I don't know how else to other describe it other than it was health food. Like one dude had this mango kelp product that tasted like mango and was very sweet and very delicious. But apparently it's this gel format that is made with kelp. So I'm guessing it's perhaps agar based. I'm not sure. I didn't ask him because he was handing out free samples. So that was entertaining. And I really met some interesting people and I got some of the dirt of what's happening. Apparently there's a new player on the scene and she is very aggressive and she is trying to throw shares and kind of push other people out of the market so that way she becomes the dominant fair for Southern California and everybody has to go to her fairs and do everything. So I was like, oh, okay, fascinating, good time.
The drama of the regional circuits and psychic fairs, metaphysical fairs, what have you. There's always that one that is the strong arm, and then there's everybody else that actually does very well that kind of circles around them.
And people also talk because the company who was putting on this fair, they used to be attendees for other fairs. And so they were familiar with things. And honestly, I feel like perhaps this post-2020 stuff with not being able to do fairs has caused people to explode out. And now there's so many fairs that they see, it seems like the customers who come to these, they are seasonal. like, they're not going to attend every fair every weekend happening all the time. And I'm not sure if they're really, if all of these fairs happening every weekend are really being able to, like, pull in the attendance, especially of perhaps people who would not otherwise plan on attending one. And so, like, some of that tea is also that, like, some of the fairs are just not being well attended. And so, which they're very expensive because hotels are not cheap.
Very true.
And doing events at hotels, they're not cheap. And so this company was trying out a different kind of location that's in a city here in Los Angeles called San Pedro, which is on a mountain near the coast. And this location was very close to the ocean, so it was much cooler and breezier there than it would have been anywhere else. But some unfortunate circumstances that they could not correct for happened, and the space that they had contracted for was shut down because, unbeknownst to them and unbeknownst to the agent that they had made the reservation with, her boss ordered a bunch of construction on that space in order to renovate it and improve it or something. I'm not quite sure. And so they ended up deciding to take another space, and that space was far away from everything. So there was no foot traffic going around nearby. So there wasn't really anybody coming to this psychic fair. So it was very inactive. And so it allowed people to really, like, sit and talk, and the organizers were going around talking with people and trying to brainstorm ideas for things in the future. And I recommend them, like, well, why don't you try doing stuff outside and, you know, in a place? And maybe, like, in the summertime closer to the coast, it's a little bit cooler. In the wintertime, you could be more inland because then it's a little warmer, you know, and there's options. And outdoor events are apparently cheaper because then you're not having to, like, contract with hotels. And some people were like, yeah, I'd be down for that. And other people were like, well, but then we have to bring our own tables and we have to bring tents and tarps and this and that. And I was just like, this is best half the fun.
It's like camping. Now, there's definitely a delicate balance, you know, to putting these different events on, having spent some time myself as a promoter and event producer along the Great Lakes region, through Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio. You know, it's interesting. The mix of individuals that you get. You know, folks, if there are such fairs going on near you, definitely take a moment and check them out. You never know what you're going to find. Like Brother Christopher said, you know, welcome, here's the mushroom lady. But especially one thing I do like to about psychic fairs, and I do want to share about them, is, and honestly, this kind of goes along well with our topic for today. You know, for those who are kind of seeking, if you're unsure of what path you fall on, what path to take, where you want to take your personal brand of spirituality, or magical practices, etc., you know, psychic fairs are definitely a wonderful spot to kind of check things out and see what's available, even in your area. There are things, I guarantee you, that there are things that you will never know existed right in your backyard in a lot of cases until you go to one of these shows. You know, Reverend James and I, we stumble across things all the time that it's like, oh, hey, did you know that was there? We both look at each other and it's like, nope. So definitely a lot of value to be had to, for those that are learning, growing, developing, and, you know, really trying to put themselves on that path of spirituality and magical abilities. But I think, you know what, we are in a wonderful spot to take a few messages from our sponsors, and we'll be right back to jump into our topic for today of gay spirituality.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Now for some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Tuesday, July 9th on the Crystal Silence League in syndication with John St. Germain will be the topic of blessing services, saints, and more on Black Hawk. And Tuesday, July 9th on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LeFay will be the topic of left-hand magic. And Wednesday, July 10th on The Now You Know Show in syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of Seeds of Prosperity and Red Onions, which those listening to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour yesterday will notice there is a change. So be mindful of that. Thursday, July 11th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deb Voith in a special syndicated episode will be the topic of hand fasting and hand parting. And next Sunday, July 14th at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman will be Brother Christopher on the topic of rootwork strategies for toxic people. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. So while we were preparing for today's show, Brother Christopher and I were chatting through different topics and things that, seeing what really sparked an interest and lit that fire. And when we came across the discussion of spirituality, and especially for the purposes of today's discussion on gay spirituality, you know, this is a topic that's kind of timely. You know, we did just leave Pride Month. And a lot in the LGBTQ community struggle with questions of spirituality, spiritualism, faith, religion. It's, I don't know, in my opinion, one of the most contested and hot button sort of topics when it comes to the LGBTQ community. LGBTQ plus, I should say, community. Why don't you get us started off here, Brother Christopher, and lead us through gay spirituality.
Okay, where to begin? I guess I should start with, for my myself, when I was a teenager and started getting into spirituality and the occult and magic and folk magic and everything, I was also realizing and accepting that I was not heterosexual and that I was definitely homosexual. And that was definitely part of my breakthrough, because it was accepting at the time in the 90s when I was in high school that I was going to be rejected, because I had already passed through a period of where I was bullied by students in high school for declaring my homosexuality. I went through a dark period of my life, and it was through the occult and magic that it helped me come through it. And so I've always had an eye out for certain things where being homosexual and spirituality overlaps. And thus I found it. And it's not something that is really out there as much. I mean, it is out there, and it's not difficult to find, but your average Barnes & Noble or your local big brand bookstore often doesn't carry books about it. Even in the gay section, it's not really always there. And you just kind of, like, find books and you find people talking about it if you're looking for it. And sometimes it just, like, might be there kind of, you know, if you just turn a corner and you'll find something or someone who is connected to those things in that way. Because in a certain sense, there are groups out there that embrace it. I belong to at least two of these groups. But there are more now. And it was also like the awareness or the consciousness of gay spirituality was also very much a thing, especially with a lot of the early gay civil rights movement with certain people within it who then became influential in founding some of those groups out there that sort of picked up the torch from Stonewall and the other riots and demonstrations for gay civil rights and gay civil liberties in the mid-century in the United States. And some of those people even then took it globally. And directly related to that, that I think I'll start with, is a group called the Radical Fairies. And it was a group of gay men, and they recognized that, that they were radicals, and that is kind of how they met. Interestingly, it's an interesting bit of history in relation to kind of how this history has unfolded, is that all these gay men met each other through radical political organization and gay civil rights organization in Los Angeles, in the 60s and 70s. And especially after Stonewall is when they really started to make more connections. But some of them were already connected because they were active with gay civil rights groups in Los Angeles who were out there protesting, but kind of going about it quietly. I'm blanking on one of the names of one of the early groups. But one of those gentlemen, his name was Harry Hay, and post 1969 with the Stonewall riots, he started communicating more with other gay men who he knew and who were connected, and some of these connections also happened through communist organizations, GASP, Scandal, oh my goodness, you know. Because, of course, a lot of radicals at that time they turned to communism because, of course, it was against a lot of the...
was like the counterculture movement.
It was the counterculture movement, and communism was part of it. And a lot of people embraced it. And a lot of those people who also embraced communism, they also were homosexuals, because I think they saw their own personal liberation through communism as well, as like a way to establish civil rights or a fairer and more just society for everybody, including homosexuals, like gay men and women, lesbians, even transgender people, everybody. And so one thing led to another, and with the talks that he was having with all of his friends here in Los Angeles, who are various people whose names escape me at the moment, who went on and did future things afterwards related to gay civil rights as well, they decided that they should sort of spread the word and use their networks of gay people that they knew, especially gay men, because they were mostly all men and they were all organizing. And so they spread the word out saying, hey, we're going to do this thing in the wintertime in New Mexico. And if you're gay, like, come to this place in New Mexico, and we're all going to get together, and we're going to, you know, kind of work out this gay ideal. And some of the stuff that they talk about was gay spirituality and how being gay, whether openly or at least accepting it for yourself, even if you were not necessarily out to coworkers or family, but perhaps to other people, and you were participating right. in the gay culture that existed at the time, how that affects our sensibilities and how we perceive things and how we operate. And from this, Harry Hay developed this concept that I think he'd probably been working on before based upon some of the stuff that I read about him. But he called it subject-subject consciousness. And for him, this was a unique thing that a lot of gay men embraced, where because of the discrimination that we felt and because of the isolation that we've been exposed to, we tend to, in a sense, be more sympathetic and empathetic, and thus view other people as people and approach them as people and not approach people as objects, because of course the opposite of subject-subject consciousness is subject-object consciousness, where people, a person only thinks of themselves in a situation and thus goes around seeking to exploit other people because they don't see them as people, they see them as
right.
an object, as a tool to help them achieve their goals. And so this was explored, and other various things were talked about. But also during that weekend in New Mexico, they also had rituals. And the rituals aren't really well described. They're just kind of free form. And, you know, they, other than the people sending out the notice and perhaps putting together, like, securing the location and, you know, providing for all these people coming there and everything, there wasn't much in the way of, like, a top-down hierarchical organization. The goal was to have everybody kind of come together as one and have any kind of decision-making be done as a group as a whole and get everybody to agree or to discuss things out until everybody agreed. And so... that became a major sticking point with a lot of groups and organizations that sprung up from that weekend. And one of the main groups that came about from that weekend in New Mexico, they called themselves the Radical Fairies. And the Radical Fairies, if you ask 10 Radical Fairies what a Radical Fairy is, you'll get 11 and a half answers. that are all different. Because that's just how different and independent and varied Radical Fairies see themselves. And so from that weekend, these Radical Fairies, in a certain sense, and this is my own perception, you could kind of compare them to second wave feminists who embrace the idea of separatism and wanting to have land and space apart from mainstream community. And of course, a lot of those feminists were also lesbians. And so they also felt that they wanted a community of women separate from the mainstream heterosexual community where it was always mixed. And so I feel like these gay men also felt that they wanted this ideal as well. And so some of these gay men that attended were also rural gay men who didn't live in cities. And, you know, they knew that there's land and there's space to be had and cheaply. And, you know, communities can be built. And, of course, this was also the heyday of the building of communes, of where people would live together communally. And so people went looking, and going forward from that, but not immediately, there are various Radical Fairy communes scattered across the United States. And over time, there's now actually communes in Australia. I think there's one in Europe. There's one in Canada near New England. And they all have various names. And I can't think of all. There might even be more locations. And some locations aren't necessarily even listed. They're only known to people who live in that area.
Right.
And so they're not necessarily part of the greater knowledge of Radical Fairy communes all scattered around. And so a lot of these Radical Fairies, they embrace drag in all of its aspects. A lot of them do what might be called booga drag, where they're not exactly the prettiest, they're not exactly the fishiest or most female passing, but, you know, they're wearing dresses, they're wearing nightgowns, and they're living their best life with all the glitter that they like. And then there's also, like, leather Radical Fairies, and there was a book written about that, and there's some, if you Google Radical Fairies, you might find some videos on YouTube of Radical Fairies. One of the biggest and best known Radical Fairy communes is called Green Mountain, and it's in Tennessee. I believe it's outside of Nashville, and it is out there in some mountain that nobody thought anything could be done with it, so the land was hella cheap. And from what I understand, those Radical Fairies have built up community there, and to the small rural town that's near it, which I believe is called Liberty. It is also very gay, because with all these gay men out living in the countryside, it has also brought them in. As some of them were like, yeah, this is too rural. I wasn't ready to be, you know, an independent, self-sufficient farmer growing my own food and everything. And so they moved to Liberty in order to be close, but not actually live there. And I've met some people who have lived there. And also during a lot of early paganism got mixed in with the Radical Fairies. So they tend to observe the Wiccan Wheel of the Year. And a lot of major gatherings will happen at communes during, say, the summer solstice or Beltane or what's another big one? I think Halloween is a big one, although not in all areas. Or Samhain, I think they tend to call it Halloween more because it's more fun. our Halloween is more about like the costume and the pageantry and that kind of stuff. Whereas, of course, the ones who do call it Samhain, they're the ones who are really going in for the spiritual aspect, and they'll do rituals that are very, again, free-form and loose, but it will invariably focus upon kind of homosexual archetypes in some way. There are people who have gone through antiquity and identified gods and spirits that are associated with homosexuals and homosexuality. For example, in the Greek pantheon, Dionysus has been identified as very much connected to homosexuality and even transgenderism. The priests of Kybele, who are known to castrate themselves and dress as women, have been adopted by some gay and trans groups out there. And from like the Norse pantheon, some of them see identification with Loki because he was often changing his gender in various roles in his stories. Some of them identify with Frey and Freyr as opposed to the Aesir with like Odin and the rest, because the Vanir seemed a little bit more gender mutable and also sexually orientated to being a bit more sexually fluid. And there is a lot of discussion because apparently like within Norse circles, there are words that imply homosexuality. And then we also know from Roman accounts of Germania, and the Gauls, that homosexual encounters between men were common, which, of course, the Romans also had plenty of homosexual encounters, but they had a much more sort of strict hierarchy of how it was acceptable, whereas right. It was kind of shocking to them that the Northmen were much more freeform, and you know, somebody who might be identified as a leader might take a passive role in homosexual sexual acts, whereas that would not be acceptable, really, in Roman and Greek society, where people at the top needed to be the active member, where it was only the lower classes who could be acceptably submissive in the role, kind of a thing. And there's many, many more. And a lot of radical fairy stuff, the people into spirituality also explore a lot of Native American spirituality. And they don't tend to appropriate it that I'm aware of, but they do like to study it and try to understand it because of the role of how two spirits worked within various Native American tribes, and how before the arrival of European colonization, that two spirits were highly revered and recognized, and some two-spirit people even managed to function and be very honored within certain Native American tribes. I feel like one of the last sort of biggest traditional two spirits was a Navajo person. And there's even photos of this person. And I say this person because I think they generally identified as a woman, but everybody knew that they were two spirits. But they would dress as a woman and live as a woman, and I believe they had, like, married a man who was their husband, although I think they outlived their husband. And their knowledge of Navajo cultural arts and artistry was immense, and they passed down that knowledge until they passed away, I think, in, like, the 1950s. And when they passed away, I believe they were, like, in their 90s. And I think this person had even been interviewed by some early homosexual civil rights people who were, you know, attending universities in the 50s and wanted to know more about him because they were studying anthropology and that's Native American studies. And, of course, they had their own personal reasons, but they didn't necessarily go into that. And so much more. And the Radical Fairies, living in Los Angeles and growing up here, you'd think there'd be lots of Radical Fairies, but by the time I came out in the early 2000s and started seeking out community, there was really no Radical Fairies left in Los Angeles. And the few that were around were very distrustful of outsiders. And there's a very sad reason for that, that one of the original sort of founders of the Radical Fairies movement, after his participatory role in the beginning in like the 70s and 80s, he left and went to university and got a degree in psychology all the way up to, I believe, a doctorate. And his focus was on Jungian psychology. And he became very focused on the shadow and trying to deal with the shadow. And for a period, he was doing a lot of shadow work as it relates to homosexually identifying men and how, you know, we, regardless of how we express ourselves, we often get feminized. And feminized in the sense that we are demeaned as women as a kind of warped misogyny of the patriarchy, which
right.
I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth. But his followers took this to an insane degree, and they started showing up to all Radical Fairy meetings in Los Angeles, and they would become disruptive and aggressively so. And they would challenge people on the spot, and they would do things to interrupt the harmony and the enjoyment of the other Radical Fairies in Los Angeles. And if they knew about any event that was open to the public and that's not a private event, they would show up and they would cause problems. And so finally, all the events stopped being public and everybody just started doing private. But then, you know, even then, somebody would get invited to a private event, and maybe before they had been not polite, kind, respectful, and
right.
then somehow they got sucked into this shadow work ideal, and they just flipped overnight and started becoming aggressive and kind of emotionally abusive for it. And they apparently embraced this sort of bizarre hyper-masculinity, which was not really what this founder had gone for. And so he has disassociated himself from these people because apparently they're still out there. But I feel like maybe now more people are aware of them and are less afraid to be like, well, we're going to tolerate you. They're like, no, if you're going to disrupt the peace, get out. We don't want you here. And they'll just kick them out now instead of trying to put up with their nonsense. So, and I have encountered these people. There's an organization here in Los Angeles called the One Archives. And they're part of the University of Southern California, which is a private university in downtown Los Angeles. And they try to keep a history and record of LGBTQ events and history and people in the greater Los Angeles area. And they decided to do a big presentation focused on the Radical Fairies and all the people involved in the Radical Fairies and on Harry Hay. Because Harry Hay had lived in Los Angeles for many years, and so there's a lot of this documentation from the mid-century about Radical Fairies and LGBTQ people and their role in riots and organization and everything. And these shadow work people showed up and were actually protesting it, which was really weird. Like, why are you protesting a historical thing? Well, it's not showing it accurately. Well, how do you know? You haven't even looked at it. You're just standing out here saying, like, opposing this for some insane reason. I don't, like, you're not making any sense. But the organizers were like, no, you can't come in and antagonize people. If you're going to protest, you can stay outside and protest outside. And so most of them, when they found out that they weren't going to be allowed in, they left, and only like two or three stayed behind. And they tried to intercept people as they were coming in or as they were leaving, and nobody was standing for their bullshit. So by the end of the evening, they had left. And I was just like, that was a weird experience. And then about 10 years later, a whole bunch of radical fairies from the South who were regular visitors of Green Mountain, they all moved to Los Angeles to pursue careers and to do stuff. And so radical fairy events started being organized again. And I was part of those. I was part of those groups online once I found them. But most of their events were in the heart of Los Angeles, where I live at sort of the border, and with traffic and timing and everything. Like, they would have it at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday, because that's when they all got off work, and they all lived within like, you know, a mile of each other. And I'm just like, yeah. As much as I'd love to come, I don't really want to sit in traffic for 3 hours. And
I've experienced that traffic firsthand.
Yeah, and my work ends at 5, so I'm not going to be able to get there in a timely manner, really. So I often was unable to attend a lot of those events, but I did attend a few, and they're all good people for the most part. And while I was a member of those groups, eventually I just felt that I didn't really need to see all the updates and everything of events happening that I was unable to attend. So I just left because I was like, meh. There wasn't a whole lot of other discussion going on. It was mainly all used for organizing and getting people to come together. So if I'm unable to come together, then I'm just going to go my own way. I have met a few other radical fairies who moved to Southern California who are in my area, and they're all generally lovely people for the most part. And they all are hardcore homosexuals who also tend to be liberals and progressive and want to fight for, you know, civil rights for everybody and protections and trying to create a better society here in the United States. So, yeah. And then another group that sprung up from 1979 when the Radical Fairies all met up in the desert, several of them were men who lived in San Francisco at the time, and they met each other in New Mexico and then stayed in contact when they went back to San Francisco. And one of them had come to San Francisco from Iowa. And while he was in Iowa, he had staged a drag performance of The Sound of Music. And in order to do the costuming for that, he approached a Catholic nunnery and asked if they had any old habits that they could donate for this performance. And so he was given several habits, and it was used in the performance. And when he moved to San Francisco, he took those habits with them. And so he was conspiring with his fellow radical fairies in San Francisco one day, and he was like, I know, let's all put on these nun habits as men and go walk around San Francisco, and let's just see what happens. And so they went around to San Francisco, and there were three of these men, and they each chose, like, three different places. And I believe one of them chose the Castro, another one chose a bit more diverse spot, and the last one chose a beach that had a large cave on it. that was kind of out there in nature, but is very popular as like a tourist spot for people who want to go see nature in San Francisco. And everywhere they went, people reacted. Some people were like, oh, my God, this is brilliant and hilarious. I love it. Other people were horrified and thought that they were making fun of nuns. How dare you? And other people were just like, this is great. Like you guys should do this more often. And they were like, you know, there's a thing to this. And so that's the foundation of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, which is a group of 21st century gay drag men who originally they started off kind of doing more performances in nun drag. And then one of the founding sisters her original name was like the name of a Hindu deity who's like Shiva and Shakti combined, whose name escapes me at the moment. And she's kept a version of that name where she just goes by the name Sister Vish. And Vish had an interesting side career where she was a sex worker. And as a sex worker, she was one of the few sex workers in San Francisco who was known for being like a dominant top. And she did not want people to know that on the side, she was doing drag. So in order to conceal her identity, she put on... like geisha makeup from Japan that is like this heavy white face with then a lot of like red designs on it, so that way people wouldn't recognize her, and it was effective. And so other sisters saw this and were like, hell yeah, let's do this. So they all started doing that white face as well, and then it started to branch off and people would do different styles of makeup, people would paint themselves in various ways. And at the same time, there was this sort of bizarre offbeat drag troupe called the Coquettes, who were doing bizarre gay counterculture performances in San Francisco at this old theater. And they were doing very bizarre and offbeat makeup. And so I don't think any sisters were officially involved in that, but they really liked the makeup ideals, so they incorporated more of that. And then the AIDS and HIV epidemic struck. And of course it struck these major urban centers like San Francisco and New York and Los Angeles really hard, where a lot of gay men were living and in close contact and having a lot of unprotected sex because HIV was a new STD that wasn't really out there. And so the sisters found themselves in a position where, as their role in nuns, that they could fundraise and engage in trying to care for the gay men who were getting sick and dying from HIV. And so they would fundraise and do stuff, and then some of them were already working in the medical field as nurses, and so they started turning their knowledge of nursing and medicine into caring for other people and putting together, you know, ways for people to, like, stay in their homes or to bring them food or to just support people. And it really exploded. And from that, I feel like it really attracted a lot of members. And some of those members went overseas, and they went to Australia, and they went to England and Europe, and they got houses started over there. And some of those members traveled across the United States, and a house was founded in Los Angeles. And some members moved to New York and started doing it there. And it kind of got mixed up more with the Radical Fairies in New York. And so the house there is very offbeat and independent. But other houses popped up. And then starting in the 2000s, a focused effort to kind of organize things a bit more, especially because of some legal issues where people claiming to be sisters who put on the outfits went around collecting money and then ran off with it. And so the sisters needed to kind of legally organize themselves a bit more in order to protect themselves, as well
right.
as to file lawsuits against these people who were besmirching their good name. And so now there's, I almost want to say there's possibly a house in just about any major city in the United States. There's one in like Miami, one in Orlando. There, I think there's some forming in the Carolinas right now. There's one in Houston, Texas. I'm a member of the Los Angeles house and have been since like 2006. There's members in Seattle. There's, as one comment on the chat box mentions, there's a house in the Russian River in Northern California, which is close to Lucky Mojo. There's another house that is in Humboldt, which is another 6 hours up from the Russian River in Northern California. There's a house in Portland. Honestly, I can't keep up with all the houses popping up everywhere. But there's a house in Sydney. There's a house in London. I think now there's only a house in Edinburgh in Scotland. There's a house in Paris. There's a house in Berlin. I'm not sure if any other European houses have opened up. There was a house in Colombia back in the 90s to early 2000s, which they were very interesting in that all of their nun habits, they wore large black glasses that mostly covered their face, and their nun habits were built to be tearaways. So because at the time in Colombia, homosexuality was against the law. So they would show up with a bunch of other homosexuals, protest for their civil liberties, and then as soon as the first sign of police showing up happened, everybody would disperse, and all of the drag nuns would rip off their outfits and be dressed in plain clothes underneath, and then just spread out into the crowds of the cities to avoid it. And one of those sisters ended up moving to Texas, and she had some interesting stories to tell about living in Colombia at that time, which now Colombia is actually fairly progressive and has and legalized gay marriage and has enshrined gay rights into its laws and its country. So, you know, apparently their protesting and activism was successful. And, of course, being as nuns, like, a lot of us, not all of us, but a lot of us embrace spirituality in kind of an offbeat way where it is focused on homosexual stuff. A lot of us are interested or tied in with the radical fairies. There is that subject-subject consciousness that comes up again. But we also build rituals around homosexual themes. We tend to embrace radical and alternative symbolism. Like, even while being nuns, quite a few sisters have put on nuns' habits and then added horns and painted themselves with red designs so they look like the devil, just to be contrary. Other sisters have chosen a more male drag and have gone out as monks or bishops with offbeat names, like Brother Peter Beater, for example, if you understand. And all of us have interesting and offbeat names. My personal name is Sister Dirty Sanchez. I have a full title. It's Sister Dirty Sanchez of the Shit-Eating Grin, Scatomancer to the Stars, and Mistress of the Second Harvest.
I love it.
It's very, very entertaining telling my full name to people and watching them react, because some people are like, ew, and they pull their hand away, and other people are like, oh, that's funny. Oh, that's hilarious. And then, of course, some people are like they don't get it, and they're just like, oh, so you're the dirty sister, and I'm just like, so dirty.
But, you know, these connections that are built, though, it, you know, you have that a little bit of tongue-in-cheek humor, it opens doors and it welcomes people in. You know, Reverend James had shared in the chat talks about the world orders of the sisters. And for those that haven't had a chance to take a look yet, I mean, the sisters are in Canada, Australia, Colombia, France, Germany, Scotland, Switzerland, the UK, Uruguay. You know, these movements and the inclusivity and the message and the spirituality of these groups, it started very much local to the U.S., more local to Brother Christopher than to myself. But, you know, between the sisters and the Radical Fairies, we're talking about some very foundational and very important moments in LGBTQ plus history when it comes to spirituality. You know, spiritualism in and of itself being counter to the quote-unquote major religions of that kind of pervade the conversations has very, and for a very long time, been an open, had an open door policy to those of the LGBTQ community. But these organizations, it's like they took it and they owned the stage and said, follow this, you bitches.
They definitely just try to inspire them, at least with the LA House and one of its founders, Sister Unity Divine. Her background, she grew up in New England, but then later on in life, she very much embraced Hinduism, and like in her personal life, she has a guru, and I believe she even went and lived in India for a bit as a, what's it called? There's like a specific name for...
Ashram.
An ashram. Yes, thank you. She went and lived in an ashram, and so a lot of the rituals that she has done for events in Los Angeles, because a lot of event organizers and a lot of the LGBTQ events invite us, and we do a performance where we do a blessing for the event and all the attendees, because we're nuns and we're supposed, we're trying to bless the community. And so her blessings often reflect her Hindu background. But then, she blesses things that I feel like in traditional Hinduism, as most people are in mainstream Hinduism, people wouldn't necessarily think to bless those things or consider blessing those things. Anything from, genitalia to people's underwear to we're invited to certain contests for the leather community kind of regularly every year, and we'll bless, gay fetish sex in some way or some form. There's a very large event that happens for the leather community in Los Angeles where it's a competition between all the smaller locations or smaller groups, leather title holders for the year. And one year that I can recall off the top of my head right now, we got a very fancy motorcycle that was part of the stage for the event. And we blessed it by dumping very chunky Mylar glitter over it, which caused a lot of leather people to be very upset. But otherwise, it went over great, and, people were very enthused by it. And I've had people in the gay community come up to me while in face, and because of my face and my appearance being different and being not the sort of, I'm not another gay person. I'm this nun. I'm kind of bigger than life. And they open up to me and they tell me of things that they're going through, and I offer them support and consolation to them, and as well as sometimes, you know, I have kept sort of notes of, you know, if you need someone to talk to more than me, call these people. And this is a local group in Los Angeles who deals with that specifically for gay people. And, like, having those community resources to help our community. And sometimes I've encountered these people later, and they're like, you know, my life was in the dumps. I had broken up with my boyfriend, had dumped me, and I was addicted to crystal meth, and I ran into you, and you just sat there and held space for me, and that gave me the strength to, you know, find a way to quit using and to get my life back together. And, you know, and now I'm settled, and I'm not homeless anymore, and I'm not using drugs anymore, and, you know, I'm happy, and I'm living my life, and I don't feel this guilt because, you know, he was kicked out of his house by his parents when he came out as gay in Missouri, and he fled to Los Angeles shortly thereafter and has carried around this guilt and shame for so long. Until it finally, like, the only outlet he had for feeling this way was through drugs, until finally, you know, like, my moment with him, and he managed to realize that he didn't need the drugs, and he didn't have to feel ashamed and guilty for being who he was, and that it wasn't his fault or anything that he did. It was his family's shitty behavior on their part for rejecting him and throwing him out. And that helped him kind of get his head together and pull himself together. And those are individual experiences. And I often find a lot of nuns have these experiences within the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And they happen unexpectedly. They can happen at a small event. They can happen... I had one once at a major street event that had easily, you know, 10,000 participants in San Francisco many years ago. You know, you never know when you're going to be able to touch somebody's life and help them turn around for them. And that's kind of part of the spirituality of, like, being this drag persona as a nun. That's, you know, like, nuns are there to help the community. That's what nuns do, Buddhist nuns, Catholic nuns, Hindu nuns. You know, they're taking care of things, and they're also trying to live their spirituality. So even kind of the sisters who are atheists in the group, they also tend to still have some appreciation for at least spirituality as a community function that can bring people together and focus attention and offer outreach and support to people in an emotional and social context that even if they don't necessarily believe in God or a spirit or anything, you know, they can appreciate how this ritual functions on a human level with, you know, social, emotional bonds and interactions. So there's that.
You know, there really is this unique energy that flows through these communities, whether you're talking the more kind of church-dwelling spiritual organizations or, you know, the outreach organizations that you know, or have really blazed trails over the years, and then to the covens that hold their, you know, hold their place in nature. There's a strength in these communities that being recognized really, there's a uniqueness to this intersection in the LGBTQ community. you know, where faith, identity, empowerment, all of these things come together. And it truly is revolutionary. And, you know, in this day and age, I think about these stories that you've shared with us tonight, you know, the foundations of the Radical Fairies, the foundations of the sisters. And then how it, you know, things kind of contracted for a bit. It was like everything, there was such energy being put out, and then it kind of contracted a bit when it kind of hit this moment of, you know, kind of that hate movement that kind of comes around. It seems almost like we're experiencing that again, you know, in the United States right now, and you know, kind of in the world, where there were so many years of color and light and love, and we're seeing that kind of contract again. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, a conversation like this that we're having here tonight, letting people know that these resources still exist, these sources of support are there for you. These are the foundations to expand from. It's so important.
Yes. I mean, especially in the face of feeling like you're disconnected and there's no resources.
Right.
And then, of course, also, you know, that some of these, like, especially when it comes to, like, youth and reaching gay youth and giving them support can be so difficult because, in the United States at least, children are essentially the chattel property of their parents until something, their parents or guardians, until something comes to light that exposes that abuse is happening in some way. And otherwise, the parents have absolute control to do whatever they want, and there's no, you know, and the kids at least feel isolated and separated and don't really have any kind of way to reach out, depending upon where you live. I mean, you know, gay kids in Los Angeles, there's resources, and more organizations than not are sympathetic to their issues. I knew one gay youth some years ago who is living his best life now, and very, he seems very successful and happy and doing well. But when I met him, like, his mom was not accepting of his homosexuality. And I would often see him in homosexual social spaces that were open to underage people. And one time I saw him there, and he's just like, oh, yeah, I got picked up by the police last night. And I was like, why? He's like, oh, I was trying to find a friend's house, and I couldn't remember which apartment number was theirs. And so I was knocking on doors because I knew what building it was. And so somebody called the cops because I'm going around knocking on doors because he's this, like, young black man. And so the cops showed up, and they're like, you're out past curfew. You're under 18. You're supposed to be at home. And he was just like, oh, well, my mom threw me out. And the cop was like, excuse me? Come with me. And drove, like, what's your address? Drove him home, knocked on the door, and started to read his mother the Riot Act. And basically was just like, you have a legal duty to care for your son. You cannot kick him out. Otherwise, we will arrest you and charge you with a crime. So you will take care of your son, and you will make sure he's home past curfew, and you will do everything that is necessary to do it. And young man, here's my card. If she kicks you out or doesn't take care of you, please tell me, and I will make sure that it's taken care of. And I was like, I was almost on the verge of tears when he was telling me this, because A, I was absolutely furious at the behavior of his mother. Like, how do you call yourself a mother and throw your child out on the streets? Like,
right.
That would not fly, especially with my mother. And then to have a police officer support him and, you know, lay into the mom and say, no, you're not going to do this. This ends now. And so afterwards, like, you know, things were civil. She kept her mouth to herself, and she did the bare minimum that she was required by law, which is she kept a roof over his head, she fed him, and everything. But, of course, when he turned 18, he knew it was coming. So he was prepared, and he moved out, and, you know, and he took care of stuff. But, yeah. And so, like, I personally have done more research into it. And, yeah, all these parents kicking out their kids, like, they're breaking the law because it's the law in every state. You have a legal duty to take care of your kids. You cannot kick them out of the house. It's against the law. But most kids don't know this. So when they're out there on the street after they've been thrown out by their parents or guardians, they don't know where to go. They don't know who to talk to. You know, they've never been told these things. And there are a few stories and examples of gay youth who successfully sued their parents because they, when they got kicked out, they ended up going to, like, a youth home. They got told what their rights were, and it turns out that, like, the state can sue parents who refuse to take care of their kids and force their and force them to give the state money that the state gives to the kids, aka child support. And it is a lot more child support than what, like, a single parent would get from another parent, because it often includes housing and money for food, as well as money for just utilities and, like, everything else. And unfortunately, this only tends to happen after the state has exhausted other options. You know, if it's just not tenable for the minor to stay in their parents' home, then this is sort of the thing that will happen, because the parents may be abusive or they're just so hostile to their kid that it's not safe. And so in a certain sense, like, child protective services are involved, but it's very different.
You know, if only that were the experience of gay youth.
So many more.
You know, from coast to coast, you know, north to south, east to west. You know, a situation like that would play out very, very differently in a lot of the parts of the country, especially in the more rural regions, unfortunately. But, you know, that it just kind of calls us back to getting that word out there, being the activist, being that. I'm a little hesitant to say spiritual warrior because it sounds like such an oxymoron, but it kind of is, where, you know, making sure that we are shining the light for, and it's in a lot of cases, it isn't just the youth too, because there are plenty from Gen X and older that grew up in a much different age of, you know, repression and hatred and secrecy, et cetera, that even with the current freedoms, still don't know how to connect and, you know, live authentically. So, you know, spirituality is the bridge, I feel, in most cases, to really let folks know that they're not alone. and there are resources, there is support, there is family that can be chosen.
Oh yes.
You know?
And even some of that family, like, there are, like, gay spirituality is not just one thing. I mean, a lot of people who are into gay spirituality also embrace paganism, or mm-hmm. they might embrace alternative religions, but there's plenty of gays involved in Christianity. There's even literally a gay Christian movement that has churches called the MMC. I forget what that stands for. But there's several gay churches along that line here in Los Angeles. And I think they've even joined up with a nationwide, like, Methodist group that is very open and accepting of gay people. The Episcopalian Church more often than not tends to be open and accepting of gay people, and in a Christian context. So, you know, if you feel very strongly about your relationship with Jesus and God, and you don't want to leave that behind, but you don't know how to make peace with it while being homosexual, like, it exists. And people are doing it, and it's there, and you don't have to live separate from them if you don't want to. It's not my personal flavor, per se. I mean, like, Jesus
right.
is my homeboy and everything, but I don't identify as a Christian. You know, but other people, like, it's there. There are also gay Hindus and gay Buddhists and gay Muslims, where they push back against this hardline conservative rhetoric of, like, oh, homosexuality, it's a terrible thing. It's not, though. It's literally not, like, you know, in the religions that have books that, you know, identify and set things and set the tone for things. Like, it's not that. It's nowhere worse a sin than any other sin in a Christian context. The hardline conservative, you know, Muslims say that it's terrible, but really, in reading the Quran, it's not really any more terrible than anything else. It's the same thing with Judaism. You know, it's like there's this hardline conservative rhetoric of certain Hasidic groups, or most Hasidic groups, and then there's, you know, reforming conservative Jewish synagogues that, you know, disagree with that. And they accept gay people on whatever level that they want to accept gay people on. And some of them are very strongly, powerfully accepting. And others are a little bit more don't ask, don't tell, but it's all good, whatever. Like, so, you know,
I think we can sum it up. I think we can sum it up by saying love always wins. And that's what we're going to keep pushing for. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening. Until next time we meet, let's keep that magic alive and spread love. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Brother Christopher, for joining us this week. Join us next week when we'll be welcoming another fine guest. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com and at FolkConjure on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.org, and on Hoodoo Psychic. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here, and be sure to follow at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook, and at Mystics, Mages, Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thank you, Reverend James, and thank you everyone for joining us. Thank you, Brother Christopher, and in the chat, Dr. Sweet, Tamaganda, Lieberman, Phyllis Margaret Gabor, Dom Christ, and Troll T. Thanks for joining us tonight, folks. Until next week, many blessings. Good night.
See how they're scoring on us? Shots left and right.
I know. They know our next play before we even make it.
We got to tighten up off the court, too. Businesses track and sell our personal information. They dunk on us all the time with that data.
Wait, what do you mean?
You have to exercise your privacy rights. If you don't opt out of the sale and sharing of your information, businesses will always have the upper hand.
The ball is in your court. Get your digital privacy game plan at privacy.ca.gov.
Celebrate with us. Enjoy exceptional Broadway performers and world-class wine under the starlit Sonoma sky. From theater favorites to the treasured American songbook and today's popular hits, Transcendence Theater Company presents Broadway in Sonoma in the magical field of dreams, steps from Sonoma Plaza, this June through September. Get your tickets today at bestnightever.org.